Welcome to The Expert Speak, a service of the Florida Psychiatric Society. I'm Abby Strauss, and thank you for listening.
Jacqueline Hobbs is a psychiatrist with the University of Florida, and she has very graciously agreed to discuss with us a topic that is so contemporary and so necessary. We are here to talk about the relationship of women and men together, and especially the women's perspective and problems as they interact with, respond to, and survive in our modern society. Dr. Hobbs, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
This is a huge topic, so we almost don't know where to precisely begin. Let's do it somewhat generically. Have there been types of substantive changes occurring here in the United States and in the world regarding mental health issues in women?
I agree with you. It's a huge topic. And I think that I would just say that I think we've learned a lot about the area in general. There's been a lot more focus on women's mental health and trying to better understand it. Of course, we always need to do more and to learn more. I think that we've become somewhat more comfortable with treating women, especially during pregnancy and postpartum. Although, again, we still have a long way to go. We have a lot more research and data available. I always say to my residents that I train, there have been lots of babies who've been born and nursed on Prozac because it's been around since 1987. We know a lot. As women have achieved more socioeconomically, the issues of women's mental health that's been brought to light a lot more. I think about the world has changed. Women have been exposed to a lot of different stressors than they may have had 50 to 100 years ago. So I think it's changed our perspective a lot.
Have those changes resulted in a larger presence or just acknowledgement of mental health issues? Were they kept quiet previously? Now that they're more out into the world, is it more on the table, so to speak?
For me, that's the biggest thing. I think that we think about it more. We're able to talk about it more. We have women who are coming out in the media and talking about postpartum depression. They're talking about their addictions. And men are doing this too. It's just that's allowing us to put it out there and talk about it and hopefully also get more money infused into science to be able to study these things more as well.
Is there a difference in the mental health needs and challenges between the two sexes, or is that being too simplistic?
There's a lot of things we have to think about between the two sexes. I think that it's important to think about gender-specific care as much as we can. Some patients don't care. They don't mind if their doctor is or their psychiatrist is a female or a male, but some care very much. And I think as much as we can, we should try to honor that. Because I work in this field, I think I'm a little more in tune thinking about women and what part of the life cycle they're in. Are they in the childbearing age or are they perimenopausal? I think it really broadens your differential. My male colleagues, in contrast, they're thinking about men's issues. They're thinking about prostate health and the erectile dysfunction. And to be a good psychiatrist, we all have to think about that. It doesn't matter if we're male or female, but it's a little more natural for a female versus a male to think about these things. And I love learning from each other. I think that's the great part. Being very aware of phases of life cycle.
How different would be, say, an anxiety disorder or a social phobia disorder from a young girl versus someone who is 50 or 60 years of age, if there is a difference?
We have to think about risk factors. What is it during the various phases of the life cycle or just life in general, what's going on? We have to think about, for women with age, you have to think differences in ages. You have to think about treatment differences. How is the body going to respond? Metabolism differences, things like that. What are the various stressors in the times of the life cycle? Younger women going to college, starting a first job, whereas women who are older, they may have children or they may be ending their careers, starting to retire. They may be losing a spouse after many, many years. There are just lots of things I think we have to think about. That's not all related to women. Some of these things can happen with men as well, but I think we have to think about things like violence against women. Women, they're very likely to be, or much more likely to be, victims of violence, sexual traumas. Statistics from the World Health Organization, 1 in 5 women will be assaulted, sexually assaulted at some point in their life.
One of the things that now obviously pops up that we need to discuss, of late there has been a tremendous amount of discussion in the media in regards to the presidential election of women who have been abused. Do most women really keep that in? One of the things that has been just so problematic in a discussion is, why are women coming out after so many years of this alleged event happening 10, 20, 30 years ago? Mm-hmm. Is that common for women? Or how do we place that in some good perspective?
Sure. Well, I think that, of course, as these are devastating events that happen with women, I think that culturally, women may be trained in some sense to suppress these things, to not talk about them. They're very shameful events for women. They feel shame. Not that we want them to feel that way, but I think that they do. And coming out and talking about those things can be very difficult, can be traumatic again, just to talk about them. I think we as doctors, we have to take some responsibility as well. We're not always great at identifying these problems. Here in the state of Florida, we're supposed to be trained on how to identify domestic violence, for instance. That tells you the issue. I mean, we have to take CME every time we want to renew our license. So it's a big problem. I think we have to be very aware. We have to be asking about these things and then making sure that there are resources. Sometimes women think, why would I even talk about it? Because what's really going to be done about it?
That's true. The doctor may personally not have the time or be, shall we say, uncomfortable in addressing.
Exactly, exactly. And the other thing is, we know that in addressing this sometimes, we also sometimes put women in danger. It has to be this very safe relationship between the doctor and the woman, to really, that they feel like they can come up with a plan, a reasonable plan, that wouldn't make her be re-victimized. It's a tough topic, and I don't mean to say that we're not doing our, I think doctors are trying to do their best. They have the best interest of the patient at heart, but the system can sometimes make it very difficult.
So we have to bring into the doctor-patient relationship the larger culture in which both live.
Correct. Correct.
To the best of your knowledge, do women in other cultures have these same stresses? We know that in some cultures, they are far more subservient. If underneath, so to speak, behind the closed doors, if they're feeling the same things, or have they adapted and just modified their life accordingly?
I think it's a great question. I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily the best expert on other cultures in terms of this, but just knowing that other cultures may not be nearly as willing to talk about mental health. I mean, whether it's men or women, it's just something you don't talk about. Also, some of these things like violence against women, there may be no outlet for that in some cultures. And I think some cultures, again, women are sort of trained to keep things to themselves, to kind of swallow that and hold it within, you know, be strong, be brave. And that makes it very tough to be able to seek help.
And a lot of times, I'm sure you've seen it as well, there's an old expression that says anger turned inward becomes depression. So like you just said, if someone's holding something in and they come to us, I'm depressed. And you give them a pill and they kind of get better, but it's not enough. Maybe we're touching something like what you're talking about.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's why I think that what we know in psychiatry is that, yes, medication is very helpful, but there's often a root. And that's why psychotherapy can be so helpful. It's very underutilized these days with issues with payment, reimbursement for such services. But hopefully, you know, we keep getting the word out there how important this is. The research supports it. We'll eventually catch up.
Let me jump to another topic that comes up repeatedly. It's the whole notion of the menstrual cycle. It's been attached to mood shifts. Is that an overplay? Can it? Should it? How do we control it? Does it need to be controlled? Other interventions? And I have to just, in for terms of putting in a little bit of perspective, I once said to my wife, I would love to spend a couple days to see what it's like to be a woman, to see how you think. I was half joking. She looked at me with complete seriousness and said, no, if you're going to be a woman, you have to be a woman for 2 or 3 months with bad periods.
Well, I was just thinking, as you were speaking, before you got to that last part, I was thinking, 2 or 3 days, that's not quite enough.
Yeah, that's what, exactly.
Yeah. The menstrual cycle, I think that hormonal shifts in general are very important to understand, in understanding what women deal with. So in my practice, I find that some women are just way more sensitive to hormonal fluctuations than others. Of course, there's a spectrum. Some women, they don't even know they have a period. It's so light, it's so easy, they don't have any cramps or anything like that. And then on the other end of the spectrum, it's just horrendous, very painful, lots of cramps, heavy, heavy bleeding, those sorts of things. You can only imagine how that might affect mood. Some of this manifests as premenstrual dysphoric disorder, where a woman has depression-like symptoms, but it correlates with the menstrual period. And then you have all the way to the other end of the spectrum where you would have a postpartum depression that would occur somewhere towards the end of the pregnancy into the postpartum period. I've seen women have very severe depressions after weaning their baby from breastfeeding. So it kind of goes beyond just the menstrual cycle. It's kind of this whole spectrum of hormonal shifts.
What can we do about it? Many years ago, Prozac came out with a variant, I think they call it Seraphin, if I remember correctly.
Correct.
And recently, Paxil has come out to deal with some perimenopausal or postmenopausal mood shifts. Uh-huh. What can we do to help these poor women when they're suffering this much?
Yeah, those medications and ones like them, antidepressants in general, can be very helpful. I think that just really teasing this out and figuring out that this has something to do potentially with a hormonal shift. Women who have severe menstrual cycles, there should be a lot of collaboration with their OBGYN to try to figure out what kind of, they're using an oral contraceptive medication to help control their periods. That can be very helpful. Now, the caveat is that sometimes these PrEP can actually, I feel, contribute to worsening mood, just depending on the content of the hormones, the levels of the hormones, the ratios of the hormones in those preparations. And if you talk to the OBGYN doctors, they're usually pretty good about helping to figure out which one is the best for a woman to use. So those are some options, I think. Good communication with different providers to try to get those periods under control in that sense. And then otherwise with the other things, like with the weaning, breastfeeding, so I tell my patients, everything's going along great with the breastfeeding, and then all of a sudden when you wean, there can be a hormonal shift there. And so being very vigilant for any symptoms that may be cropping up at that time and getting help if that were to occur.
And pregnancy and breastfeeding, obviously, very special part of life. Depressions right. do occur. There's always a discussion. If a woman's depressed, can she take an antidepressant during the pregnancy or not? I know we try to be on the least amount of medication
sure.
if is possible. But what's the general rule of thumb right now, if there is a general rule of thumb, on pregnancy and antidepressants?
I'm glad you ask about this because it's such an important topic. One of my biggest pet peeves is when I get a referral for a patient who has just been ripped off of their psychotropic medications, their antidepressants, or whatever it might be, just because they're pregnant or breastfeeding. And there seems to be sometimes little regard for the fact that this person may have had a very severe depression, which could potentially cause a lot of morbidity, even mortality. Again, it's not a blame game with physicians, but I think it's just telling us we have to teach our physicians a lot more about this. So yes, we do use antidepressants. There's been a lot of data. It's not the kind of data we would love to have, which are randomized controlled trials, the gold standard clinical study, because you can't really ethically put one group of women on an who are pregnant on an antidepressant and another group not. That's just not ethical. That won't make it through the institutional review boards. But because, again, these antidepressants, I use fluoxetine or Prozac as an example just because it was the first SSRI. It came out again in 1987. So, I mean, we've had a lot of, I tell my residents this, there have been a lot of babies born and nursed on Prozac. So we do have some sense, a good sense of any issues with it. Sertraline is another one, Zoloft. That one, we have a lot of good data with breastfeeding. We know that very little, any, gets to the infant during breastfeeding. So we know a lot. We know a lot more than maybe out there in common knowledge. But so we feel pretty comfortable using these medications. There have been a lot of studies, epidemiological type studies, where they look at drug registries, especially in other countries where they're able to follow from birth to death and collect data on patients. And basically, we know that these drugs are fairly safe in pregnancy and breastfeeding. Of course, you always have to weigh the risks and benefits for each individual patient, but we do feel pretty confident using these drugs.
Well, that's reassuring, and obviously, as you just said, it's an individual decision between the patient and her doctor and whomever
Absolutely.
Else has to put a vote in. Let's flip to the other side of life a little bit, something that's very, very important. Libidos change. Levels of intimacy changes as we get older.
Right.
One of the things that I keep telling patients is that relationships also change. You have to look at the relationship again. How do we deal with libido changes as a fact of life? Do women come to you and complain of that problem?
Yeah, it's definitely a big issue. And some women do come to me and talk about that, and I think that's another one of those issues that there has to be sort of a safe zone with the patient and the doctor, feeling comfortable talking about that. Doctors have to ask. Sometimes we forget or we are embarrassed to ask about these things. You know, we're people too, but that's our job, is to try to bring those issues out. Sometimes it's women complaining themselves that they don't feel like they have the same libido, or the husband has been complaining to them that their libidos don't match. And I know you can probably talk about this a little bit more, but for men, it changes with life, can be affected by testosterone levels as the life cycle goes for men, and just the various stressors in life. People, they're just too tired sometimes. You know, everybody's working, taking care of the kids, they're running the kids around. It can be very difficult to have the energy to have sex. So there's a lot of issues to talk about, and medication can also affect libido. As we know, a lot of our psychiatric medications, our antidepressants can affect libido. So we have to talk about that. We have to figure out, is it just the medication, or is it that with time, as we treat the depression, we know depression can lower libido. So maybe if we treat the depression, the libido will actually get better in spite of the medication. Maybe there's hormonal issues. Maybe there's a thyroid problem. We need to be looking for these things. So we need to rule out some medical issues. Sometimes it just, there needs to be a tincture of time. I've seen some reports saying that for medication-induced low libido, one of the options is, again, to wait 6 months and see if it's still an issue, if that's possible, if that's tolerable. Those are the kinds of conversations that have to happen. Or we may need to add another medication that we know might be helpful in offsetting that antidepressant effect.
It is so complex, but it really speaks to the beauty of life and all the dimensions in our life. And
yes,
as you said, it's something that needs to be brought to the doctor if there is a problem, and
right,
not to hide it. Jacqueline Hobbs is a psychiatrist at the University of Florida. She's been very gracious in spending time with us this morning, talking about a multitude of very important issues. And this really qualifies for hours and hours and hours of detailed discussions. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.